Hello and welcome to Decoding the Gurus, the podcast where an anthropologist and a psychologist listen to the greatest minds the world has to offer and we try to understand what they're talking about. I'm Matthew Brown and with me is Chris Kavanagh, the piglet to my Winnie the Pooh and staunch, steadfast co-host. G'day, Chris.
Oh, good day, Matt. I think you have used the Winnie the Pooh one before because I remember saying that I thought you would describe me as Eeyore. So that might have been a dream. I might have just said that in some dream at night as opposed to in the real world. So
it does sound appropriate. If there was a, I'd pick you as an Eeyore. But I also think of you as my smaller sidekick. So, you know.
Both is okay. I identify with both characters. So we're not here today for a decoding, Matt. You know, the podcast, it's been around since September 2020. That's a long time in the past, Matt. Things were different then. We were younger men. We were just innocent professors dipping our toes in the guru waters before we got sucked down into the twisting abyss where we now find ourselves.
We didn't know how long podcasts are meant to last for. Nobody told us that. This wasn't something like there's no induction kit for when you start doing podcasts. And we made 3-hour podcasts. We thought that's fine. It's what people want. But maybe it's better for us to break things up a little bit. The introductions and the main episodes.
Yeah, so in good academic style, it's taken us 3 years to make even a slight change to formatting. And we already have decoding episodes, mini decoding, and interviews, right? This is what we have. And we have bonus material, which is Decoding Academia, where on the Patreon we go through more academic-y paper stuff thing, right? And we have some other bonus material. We've talked about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with Dave Pizarro, for example, but
uncategorizable, that particular episode.
miscellaneous. So, but what we were thinking, and we've received some feedback about this, but to be honest, Matt, you might forget, but once upon a time, you actually suggested breaking up the episodes into two parts, right, to give people a little break, mental break.
And you shot me down.
Because I don't like that when podcasts have an episode on something and then they split it in half because I want to just have the one reference thing. But it is true that often with our decoding episodes, the people are there mainly, they want to hear the decoding. And yes, we put in bookmarks so they can skip the intro segments or whatever we're talking about. But some wise people suggested, and we have discussed it, what if we were to shake things up? What if we kept the decoding episodes as they are, but we take out the introduction, we just make it more quickly into the decoding without a preamble or a very targeted preamble. And the other section, we separate it off into a supplementary material, if you will, which would then mean that we could release slightly more frequently and that the decoding episode would be more targeted. What about that, Matt? What do you think about that?
I think it's good. And you know that because we already agreed.
Yes. You're spoiling the illusion. This could all be decided on the fly for a while, people. No, but yes, this is right. We did discuss this and we did both agree. It makes sense.
It just makes sense.
It does. Yeah,
so that's what we're doing.
What's going to be different is that there will be the standalone decoding episodes, which are now more focused, still with intro segments, but more focused about the specific guru and the material. And maybe this is better because if people want to share an episode about some specific guru figure and they don't want to have to tell people to skip the first 30 minutes, they will now have probably a slightly more tightly focused piece of content to share. So that's the decodings. But this, what we're in now, we're basically going to take the intro segments where we talk about things happening in the guru sphere, techniques we've noticed, annoying stuff that we've come across in discourse land, or just the general kind of things that you've been hearing in the intro segment, and we're going to put them into a separate episode. And typically the intro segments are around about 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes. So we're going to keep things to around that and put that out on the main feed. But if we go longer, which we likely will, then we'll put that for people on the Patreon who want to hear us waffle for longer about those kind of topics, right?
Yeah, a whole bunch of random topics. Yep. Okay, that's the plan. We've got focused decoding episodes with good focused introduction, context, and we'll shift the intros that we would do, where we'd normally talk about a whole bunch of random things. We'll probably expand on that, talk about more random things, and we'll put it up on the main feed, but then extra bonus.
The hot takes that are too hot for the public feed, we'll put them behind the safety of the Shamrock Curtain Patreon paywall. So, yeah, yes.
None of our enemies will ever have the idea of paying $2 to
hear our terrible things. No, so, you know, if you're listening to this, you can hear the first 20, 30 minutes. And if you want to hear the rest, then you can go join the Patreon. But the point is, you're not losing anything, all right? Some people are just gaining a bit more.
That's what we're doing.
That is what we're doing.
Today is a supplementary materials. This is a supplementary.
It's an inaugural episode of supplementary materials. So
yep.
we'll put these out.
Appendix A, Appendix B, some very long tables.
Other
things.
We don't know how long it'll go for. It could be 10 hours. No, it should be shorter. But we'll see how it goes. We just like to experiment. So we're going to put this out separately, and then there will be a decoding, and the next decoding episode is on Hassan Piker, so that is coming relatively soon. But yeah, and we're going to call these supplementary materials episodes. Unless people have a better suggestion, send us in alternative names for these kind of standalone episodes that we'll release, and we'll consider it. We tried to get ChatGPT to help us, but it was useless. It's not very good with stuff like that. It doesn't really get sarcasm or that kind of thing, not very well. So humans, prove your worth. if you've got a better title on supplementary materials, please let us know.
Very good. Okay.
All right. Well, let's get into it. That's all preamble, Matt. That's just to let people know. Now they've calmed down. They've stopped panicking. Stop running around. They're just like, oh, they're not quitting.
What's not going finished. On?
I've got to clip the ease you into this new format, Matt. And maybe I should play it just and see if you can work out what it's about, who it might be talking. Let's just see Matt's decoding brain in action, live. You'll get to hear it here. Here's a clip. Matt hasn't heard this. Here you go, Matt. Unnamed clip.
What's my task? What's my objective here?
Decode it, Matt. Decode it.
Okay.
And so imaginal within, imaginal without. And then, of course, as you know, and this is part of Corbin's point, right? These two can resonate with each other. And this is the Platonic idea. I can see more deeply into reality and see more deeply into myself. And when I'm talking about that anagogic in and out of the imaginal augmentation of our, sorry for this, ontological depth perception, our ability to come into deeper contact, that anagogic imaginal play, that's what I mean by imaginal faithfulness. And it connects the deep within me to the deep without in this fashion. It's not literal, but it's not fictional. And why does that matter to me? Because I think that literal, not fictional, maps pretty carefully onto relevance realization that sits between the algorithmic, which would correspond to the literal, and the arbitrary, which would correspond to the purely fictional. RR is in between, and the imaginal is in between. So I think the imaginal is the best way of trying to enhance our relevance realization. I have more significant arguments about that, and I'm not going to go into those right now.
Thank God.
I've missed the sense makers. I'm giving you a little bit of a hint, but did you?
Oh, wow. I had to I had to Google on the fly what anagogic means.
Oh, it's a new word. That's pretty impressive. Who was that, Matt? Did you recognize that voice?
Oh, yes. That was the philosopher that we spoke to, I think. We kind of had a debate with, kind of. Yeah.
Correct. John Vervaeke.
Yes.
What was he talking about?
The anagogic and the literal and the... What was the other thing that wasn't the metaphorical? Of course.
Imaginal, fictional. Fiction and reality came up again, the Yuval Noah Harari special. But,
and we exist in between.
Yeah.
But look, I couldn't follow it at all. I couldn't. I'm sorry. I have to admit defeat.
That's all right. This is just a segment from a discussion he had with Jordan Hall of Sense Making Cubed Fame, where it's about Jordan Hall becoming Christian, like why he has become a Christian. But it's kind of a dialogue, you know, a sense making style dialogue. And this is just Vervaeke like talking about his understanding of, you know, sensory perception and how our sense is not giving us complete access to the actual external world, but there's a kind of internal representation, and then we interact with that, and it's all very, and it's going to connect to how people interact with concepts of religiosity and logos, and, you know, it's the sense making sphere. This is what they think. But I just thought that was a like little beautiful snippet of what sense making is all about. I miss them, Matt. I generally do miss them. We have to go back to some sense making content. Perhaps not that, because, you know, people's religious conversion, whatever. People can wax lyrical as they see fit about that kind of thing. But
maybe a friendly, lighthearted return, because, you know, for the most part, they're not hurting anybody. They're playing jazz with words, and maybe we just don't get it too. It could just be that you and me, we're not wired like that.
Oh, yes. Well, I did see this very recently, that on YouTube, there was somebody who did a decoding the gurus kind of thing. It doesn't have that many views. It's a very small channel, but it's coming at it from a sense-speaking perspective. It's called Decoding the Gurus, Strengths and Weaknesses, and it's from the channel Post-Apocalyptic Theology. It's only got 200 views, so it's really, really, that shows the level of interest in, you know, a critic. All the people saying, who will decode the
gurus? Somebody does it, and nobody cares. This is
nobody
sad.
Nobody cares. Yes, but that's talking about my engagement with Paul van der Klee. So anyway, that's there.
What's his take?
It's the deal with you as well. He's at three strengths. We're good at being critical, skeptical, at making people... and expressing moral indignation. We're good at that. Good at that too. I guess we are in some respects. And then we're bad at understanding the lived reality of religiosity, and, you know, just kind of, we were too trapped by our secular materialist paradigm, and we don't understand what religious people are talking about and all that. I think this applies more to you, Matt. I've spent years studying religion and what people think about and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's our limitation. So, you know.
I'll take that. I'll take that on the chin, because I think that's true. I just personally, philosophically believe that that's, like, if someone's talking about their personal, revelatory, spiritual journey and their experiences, then, you know, there's nothing really you can say, right? You can either just take it, go, okay, good. But, you know, can you agree or disagree? It's whatever, like, whatever that they say was real for them is it. So, if you can't analyze something, then it's not worth talking about. That's my attitude to these things, Chris.
Well, that's a pretty good attitude. I have another little goings-on in the gurusphere clip to play for you from old favorite Lex Fridman. You know, he interviewed Tucker Carlson recently, and as part of his agenda to spread love across the universe and increase understanding. Lex is just about having open form discussions with people from all sides. He'll be attacked, Matt. Yes, he'll be attacked, but he doesn't have a position in any of this. He's just there to spread love, as illustrated by him talking to Tucker and raising, you know, the pertinent issue about the death of Navalny and how Tucker would respond to that. And let's just see what Lex and Tucker have to say about that.
Things are dumb. I didn't get that vibe at all. You know, I don't see it, but maybe, you know, maybe they killed him. I mean, they certainly put him in prison, which I'm against. Here's what I do know is that we don't know. And so when Chuck Schumer stands up and rawr, Joe Biden reads some card in front of him with lines about Navalny, it's like, I'm allowed to laugh at that because it's absurd. You don't know.
There's a lot of interesting ideas about if he was killed, who killed him.
Yeah.
Because it could be Putin. It could be somebody in Russia who is not Putin.
Yeah.
It could be Ukrainians because it would benefit the war.
They killed Dugin's daughter in Moscow. So, yeah, it's possible.
And it could be... I mean, the United States could also be involved.
I don't think we kill people in other countries to affect election outcomes. Oh, wait. No, we do it a lot and have for 80 years, and it's shameful. I can say that as an American because it's my money in my name.
Just asking questions, Matt. Lex has heard a lot of interesting ideas about if Navalny was killed. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he wasn't killed. Maybe just died of natural causes.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he...
Neglect.
Yeah.
In the Russian prison system.
Could be a heart attack. Could be a heart attack. Could just be he had something bad. Unfortunate, you know? And as Tucker and Lex reflect on there, I mean, maybe it was the U.S. Wouldn't they be benefiting from the removal of a political rival to Putin? That makes perfect sense. Why would the U.S. want that?
You're right. It's wrong to jump to conclusions about Putin. I mean, just because he's been responsible for killing so many journalists who have opposed him, so many opposition political leaders, they keep disappearing, found dead in different places. Why would we think that the guy that he locked up on... the opposition leader that he looked up on political grounds, that he had anything to do with that. It's possible.
But I mean, the fact that that particular political leader also survived previous assassination attempts, which were very credibly linked back to the Kremlin. They even called up the people that...
because the Kremlin could have changed their mind. They wanted to kill him then. But why would... you shouldn't assume they necessarily still might want to kill him now. They could have changed their mind.
I think there's a great example of how Lex asks questions as well. Like, if Lex is asking Destiny or some liberal historian that he has on, you'll find that he pushes back rather harshly, like quite directly. In this case, he's raising the issue of Navalny. So people that like Lex will be like, look, he's bringing this issue up with Tucker. But do you not detect that maybe he's actually bringing it up in an extremely soft and pandering way, and he's yes-anding Tucker's deflection of responsibility from Putin? So, maybe it could be, but could be the U.S., could be Ukrainians. Yeah. I mean, again, Matt, Navalny said bad things about Ukraine in the past, so stands to reason that they would now seek to assassinate him in a Russian prison. That would be top of their list of things to do. Yeah.
And the reach of the CIA is long. They can get to anyone, anywhere. You know,
they're a bit like Jesus, you know, they move in mysterious ways because removing the opponent of Putin, as we've said, it doesn't seem on the face of it to make any coherent strategy for the CIA to do that.
But it's possible.
It cannot be ruled out.
People ask us why we have it in Felix, and it's this kind of thing. Why it's like this all the time. These excruciatingly softball interviews where it just Like, it's okay to interview Tucker Carlson. I know a lot of people, journalists and stuff like that, would like to do it. It's even okay to interview Putin. But the same pandering, obsequious interview that Tucker did with Putin, now Lex Carlson is doing the same style of interview with Tucker to just basically provide him a venue to justify and explain the previous one. So there, it's just, yeah.
You call them Lex Carlson there, creating an unholy amalgamation. but he may as well be. It's one, you know, the obsequious pandering nature, but it's also that Lex's political skew is very clear. He is
The political skew is like this, right? Like that love and understanding and empathy, it all goes one way. Yeah, there's just so much of it sprayed, lashings of it, hot love sprayed towards Tucker Carlson, Vladimir Putin, anyone in that direction. And yeah, you know, he just not quite so much of it in other directions. So I don't believe it for a second. And it's not that, it's not just that he's politically violent, right? That he's got a thing. It's just that he pretends he's not. Yeah.
It's
just this wonderful defense, which is I'm just showing Tucker love and understanding. It's like, no.
And you don't have to be a Kremlin stooge, because the thing is, like, if you look at Lex's output, he's essentially a fanboy for strongmen. So of course he likes Putin. Of course he likes Elon Musk. He also likes Zelensky, but he likes him in a way that, you know, like, he's a hero. So that's what Lex focuses on. He didn't leave, you know, the capital when it was attacked. So his admiration is proportional to his teenage fanboy approach.
I think that's an accurate diagnosis. I don't think he's like a secret, you know, Republican fascist operative. I think he's got just extremely juvenile approaches to things, and that kind of personality just, I think, naturally is drawn to these kinds of figures. Yeah,
Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, he went and hung out for Thanksgiving with the Trumps, right? So that's old Lex. I don't think you're going to be seeing him spending his social time with equivalent figures on the left. He's probably not going to go to AOC's Christmas dinner or whatever the case might be. But anyway, that's old Lex. So, Matt, there's been other things. There's been a lot of things happening. There's been things that you've noticed, things that I've noticed. Would you like to talk about sponsorships or Weinsteinian cringe? which would you like to reference?
Yeah, I want to do a compare and contrast with Weinsteinian cringe and Jordan Peterson's deranged anger.
Now, take it away. So what's been going on with those two chuckleheads?
Okay. Okay. Well, let's do Dr. Peterson first, because he's always fun on Twitter, and his silliest tweets are when he is just railing angrily at some completely innocuous thing. It takes very little to drive him seemingly to the absolute brink of breaking things. So, in response to a news story that was tweeted by AP, the Associated Press. As you told me, Chris, they actually don't have much of any editorial line. They just report the news, right? And they reported some news, some pretty boring news. The news was a New Jersey city that limited street parking hasn't had a traffic death in 7 years. And there's a link to an article, and the article is about them making some amendments to pedestrian crossings and walkways and things like that, and there's been limited street parking on this street for ages, and apparently with good effects for the local businesses and stuff, right? And Jordan's response is, "You have become pathetic beyond comprehension, AP, and the woke death will soon visit you." it's just so totally out of, like, I don't know. So that's Jordan, a very angry man, it seems.
Yeah, I think that is linked to his general distaste for any notion about 15-minute cities, walkable cities, encouraging pedestrian-like behavior or cycling or whatever. Any, you know, he also rails against anything to do with climate change remittance or that kind of thing. So in this case, I think it's just folded into his headspace as pedestrianization, street parking. Like, this is all part of the WEF's agenda to steal our cars, make us unable to leave, you know, the local area. And yeah, like that, yeah. That's what, well, he's done. That's why he's reacted.
Well, I enjoyed it because it just reminded me so much of Alan Partridge, because the one political issue that Alan Partridge, the fictional character created by Steve Coogan, the one political issue he feels strongly about is pedestrianization of the Norfolk city center. It's just, he likes his cars. Yeah, so Jordan, that's him. Yeah, like, I mean, but that's how a lot of the anti-woke go, isn't it? Like, they start off with actual woke things, but then suddenly everything gets folded into anything which, look, it seems even faintly progressive, is like doing something about climate change, like solar panels or something, is folded into it. So, yeah, it is a kind of a derangement syndrome.
It's also that the AP has nothing to do with this, right? They're just reporting on, like, a street, a New Jersey city that limited street parking, hasn't had a traffic theft. That's it. It's nothing to do with the Associated Press, right? They're only reporting on, like, a random story.
They're not cheering it on, Chris. Like, they're not saying, this is great, 15 minute cities.
I guess, well, yeah, I guess they're, you know, broadly they're saying good news, right? But, like, they didn't create the thing or anything like that. But Jordan is like, yeah, the woke death will visit you. Like, why? Why wouldn't it visit the council that voted for this measure or that kind of thing? But apparently the Associated Press, they're to blame. So yeah, Jordan is unhinged. One positive sign I will say is that I did notice on the Jordan Peterson Reddit, which is favorably disposed to old Jordan, generally. A lot of the people, there's some critical stuff, but mostly it's positive. In the thread discussing this particular tweet, almost all the responses are, what the hell is he talking about? Like, he needs to get off Twitter. This is ridiculous. You know, like, I saw almost no one saying, oh, this was a good take, and, you know, what a reasonable point he's making. So, yeah, if he's lost r/Jordan Peterson, he's not doing great.
Well, there is some hope then, because that ties nicely to the Brett Weinstein's behavior recently and the response of the people in the replies, many of whom I think are kind of fans, saying this is kind of a bit cringe. I think you've missed it here. So yeah. Chris, you want to lead us into that one?
Well, yeah. So Brett Weinstein, on the other hand, I've remarked that his superpower is that he's essentially immune to feelings of cringe or self-awareness or shame. Like, he doesn't seem to get embarrassed. And it used to be whenever he would post something stupid on Twitter or whatever, you would just have like hundreds of replies telling him how stupid this is and what a joke he is. And he deflected it as him. Okay, so that's where we're going to cut it for those of you on the main feed. If you want to hear more in-depth discussion of Weinsteinian cringe or the ethics of shilling for AG1 when you're a anti-capitalist show, for example, you can find that over at the Patreon. So normal decoding episodes, nothing will change. These supplementary material episodes will put about 20 or 30 minutes out on the main feed, and the rest of it will stick over on the Patreon. So if you want to support us, you can go over there or just enjoy the decodings. Okay, thanks for that. Bye.